Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It is a Tuesday. Jerry Jones is feisty in Dallas, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio and right here in FS1, 1 hour from now, the official rule book of the world, The Herd Hierarchy, top 10 NFL teams. Joy Taylor is joining me today. Justin Herbert, quarterback for the LA Chargers, on the show today. We love him. He is amazing. He's an Oregon Duck, so I'm personally rooting for him.
That's exciting.
Yeah, no, he's a great kid. Can't wait to have the GM of the Chargers and I were texting last night. He's a great kid. He's such a wonderful story. All these guys, Burrow, Herbert, Kyler Murray, like if that's the future of the league, I'm all in. All right. Jerry's feisty.
Yeah, things are falling apart in Dallas.
We're going to get to that in just a second. Let's address what we watched last night. Sometimes you don't realize what you have. People in L.A. complain about Jared Goff. How about Chicago? They've been looking for a franchise quarterback since the 40s when they had Sid Luckman. I'm not joking. They have not had a franchise quarterback in 75 years. Like a really great, great quarterback. Since 2000, the Bears have had 24 guys take a stamp at quarterback. So when people criticize the Carson Wentzes and the Jared Goffs because they're not perfect, I just roll my eyes. Miami has never replaced Dan Marino. Still, John Elway, they've never really replaced him. They had an old Peyton Manning for a few years. Jared Goff's already been to a Super Bowl. Since Sean McVay has arrived, he's won 38 games, lost 16. His quarterback passer rating is 96. He's completed 64.5% of his throws. He currently has the highest fourth quarter passer rating in the entire league. And people are already nitpicking him. Folks, do you understand there's no perfect quarterback? Big Ben makes terrible throws still. Tom Brady's unathletic. So is Eli. Aaron Rodgers is too prickly and doesn't get along with everybody. Russell Wilson's frankly a little short. Sometimes he can't see guys and throws bad picks. And Breeze, suboptimal arm. Same with Matt Ryan. Even the quarterbacks we like that are young and good, like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, you'd be like, oh, they're going to be stars. And all of a sudden the league gets a lot of them and you're like, well, they're good, but they got little holes in their game. How bad would Matt Nagy, how much would he die to have Jared Goff today? I hear this all the time. You know, in L.A., if you're not LeBron or Mookie Betts, we're just going to sell stock on you. Jared Goff's a really good quarterback. The rule in this league is find a good quarterback and just support him. And by the way, the Bears did with Trubisky, and Nagy's got a very good record with him. But all of us can see, Chicago can see, everybody can see, Trubisky has a really, really low ceiling. And if you've won Super Bowls, the Bears have won a Super Bowl, there's kind of a higher standard than Cleveland that, you know, you just want a guy that can win some games. You know, you'd like a Super Bowl, but you don't, you're not realistic. You're realistic about that. In Chicago, they've won Super Bowls. They've been great before. So they really want to get a guy that can beat Aaron Rodgers, you know, that can beat the Russell Wilsons. But I look at this and I'm like, do you understand, Los Angeles, how hard it is to find a quarterback? You start looking around the league and everybody wants a perfect quarterback. And I look at Jared Goff and the answer, of course, is not through free agency. There's a reason a quarterback hits the market. Cam, Kirk Cousins. There's a reason. It's not a career backup on his fifth team like Nick Foles. The answer in Chicago is what the answer was for the LA Chargers. You find a guy, Phillip Rivers, you get everything you can out of him, you move him, and then you go back to the draft. And sometimes, like the Chargers, you get lucky. You get two really good quarterbacks. And it doesn't happen very often. In New York, they had Eli. Daniel Jones even looks and plays sort of like Eli. Maybe they got another one. Today, they don't know. But Nick Foles was never the answer. This morning, the Rams are a legit 5-2. The Bears are a mirage 5-2 for one reason. It's not the coach. It is not the coach. If Matt Nagy was fired, he would have a job in 45 minutes. Can you imagine him in New York with Trevor Lawrence? Can you imagine him in Houston with Deshaun Watson? Atlanta with those weapons and Matt Ryan? Mitch Trubisky with Matt Nagy and not much else has a winning record in the NFL. It's not the coach. It's the quarterback. So anytime I hear people, you know, criticizing Carson Wentz and for that matter, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo or a Jared Goff, I'm like, slow down. Do you go ask people in Miami, go ask people in Denver how hard it is to find the guy. Jared Goff's been to a Super Bowl. If he's healthy in 10 years, he'll have been to another, at least one more. All right. Well, you know, I've said this before. Sometimes you hire a football coach and it takes a while to figure out if you've got the right coach. But if you've got the wrong coach, Jim Tom Sula, 49ers, Les Steckel, Minnesota, Rod Marinelli, Detroit. Like if you've got the wrong Rich Kotite, if you've got the wrong coach, Freddie Kitchens, Cleveland, it takes you about 6 games to figure it out. Sometimes it's hard to figure out if you've got the right coach. You know, he's good. He's not great, but he's pretty good, and he has ups and downs. It's just like in life. It may take years to figure out if the relationship you're in right now is going to be great. But if it's bad, you know it pretty quickly. Like it's, oh, hygiene issues. She throws stuff at me. He throws stuff at me. Like you can spot bad quickly. Dallas right now, this doesn't work. This is not close. Jerry Jones went on Dallas radio this morning. There's 2 bites. Let's play the first. And he says, I got my guy.
Certainly, we couldn't have anticipated being at this stage with our team this year. But if I were going to hire a head coach that were going to be at this stage this year and work through this for the betterment of what's in store for us for the rest of the year and for what's for us in the future, I got my man.
That was the beginning of the interview. And then the interview went on, and Jerry got feistier and feistier. And I've said this. You can always tell who's going to win a presidential election because which side of the media feels more desperate. I'll leave that for you to figure out. Jerry's this angry because Jerry's not just angry at the question. Jerry's angry that he may have made a massive mistake, and he's going to have to own up to it soon. Listen.
Does your team have a leadership void?
Where in the offensive line? Where
just overall where, when
seriously,
these?
But seriously, where would you have a leadership void? Is it an experience void? Is it a talent void? Is it a leadership void? I'm not trying to be cute here. The answer is
yeah.
No. The answer is
yeah.
No.
I'm asking.
There's not a. Well, just shut up. And let me answer. No.
Jerry. When you go into the locker room, what I'm asking is, do you see the intangibles?
You're not asking me that. I gave you the answer. When I go into the locker room, there's no leadership void in my eyes.
Okay.
Now that's your answer. Let's move on.
Okay. Jerry's not mad at the question. He's mad at his decision, and he's embarrassed by it. And that's why he's super defensive. Those were legitimate questions. I worry that the Cowboys are becoming Al Davis at the end. Al Davis and Jerry have a lot in common. Pioneers, aggressive, smart, successful. They know football. Jerry played the game. Al was an assistant coach in the NFL for years. They know the game much more than 95% of the owners. They don't know it as much as they think, but they know the game. They took on the NFL. They're very similar. They're envied by the league. Took on the NFL and won. And then they get a little older, and they want control. And they can't handle a Bill Parcells. They can't handle a John Gruden. And they never, ever recover. You know, it's interesting with Dallas. When Jerry has allowed for a big personality, Jimmy Johnson's a big personality. Barry Switzer's a big personality. Bill Parcells a big personality. When Jerry allowed that and wasn't threatened by it, the Cowboys won. I mean, Barry Switzer was not a great NFL coach. He's a legendary college coach. But he won. But when Jerry has hired guys he can control, that's what Al Davis did. Mike McCarthy and Chan Gailey and Jason Garrett and Wade Phillips and nice guys, but they kind of lack that leadership it, right? He's failed every single time. It's the same with Al Davis. When he had John Gruden, and John can lack this and that, but he's a leader. John is a leader. He's got a Mike Tomlin, Pete Carroll thing. He walks into a room. John Gruden has a presence. Bill Parcells has a presence. Barry Switzer's got a presence. Jimmy Johnson's got a presence. Jason Garrett doesn't. Doesn't mean he can't coach, but he doesn't have a presence. They're becoming the Raiders. The last 7-8 years with Al Davis, like you couldn't take him seriously. Like they were running their business different than everybody else. The Cowboys have become, to a fault, a family business, too insular. Will not take outside opinions. And I don't think Jerry this morning is mad at that guy asking the questions. I think Jerry's embarrassed. I think he's a smart guy who made a really bad choice, and he knows there's no way out but to get rid of Mike McCarthy. So coming up next, I know you get tired of this. I mean, beyond getting tired of me, that I make Brady-LeBron comparisons, but this is the best one yet, and it's unbelievable. The Buccaneers have already won the NFC. Just like LeBron took over the West. Just like that. I'll explain coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Best pair you'll ever wear. It's free guarantee. Save 15% right now, TommyJohn.com/Herd. No risk, Tommy John's. What I'm wearing right now, what I've been wearing for years. So after last night's Monday Night Football game, we've got five teams. I want to stack up all the five win teams, not name the Buccaneers in the NFC. Seattle, no defense. Green Bay, can't play physical. Arizona, talented but inconsistent. Chicago, no offense. Rams, some stars, good, but don't feel really special. And then there's Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. The NFC's always been deeper than the AFC, and I believe it is. There's fewer crappy teams. But the top of the NFC is weaker, and Tampa Bay is easily this morning the best team. Easily. The gap between Tampa Bay and two is much greater than the gap between, say, Kansas City and the two or the three or perhaps the four in the AFC. For 20 years, all we asked in the AFC was, who is going to beat Tom Brady? That's all we asked for 20 years. The NFC, though, was a carousel of good teams. Seattle, San Francisco, and Carolina got to a Super Bowl. Philadelphia and Green Bay is very, very good. Tom's been here 7 weeks. It's over. It's over. Like, they're easily the best team in the NFC. It is very LeBron to the West. For years, we all talked about how good the West was. And then LeBron got out here, and you're like, well, Portland's kind of small and doesn't defend in the backcourt. And Dallas is interesting, but way too young. And then there's Houston, and they're small and talented. They're always talented, but dysfunctional. And the Clippers, well, they've always got good players, but where's the leadership? And you wake up, and you're like, oh, LeBron just breezed through all of them. The NFC looks so much tougher for years and years until LeBron arrived in the West and Brady arrived in the NFC. I saw this in the SEC. SEC fans, we got Tennessee and we got Florida. We got Georgia. We got LSU. We got Auburn. And Nick Saban said, oh, that's adorable. Arrived and all their coaches got fired four times. The SEC is all about Alabama and Saban. Urban Meyer takes over Ohio State. Everybody looks small. He didn't lose a game for 2 years. Folks, there's a lot of good out there. There's not a lot of great. There's not a lot of Saban. There's not a lot of Urban. There's not a lot of LeBron. There's not a lot of Brady. He's been in the NFC for 7 weeks. Who's number two in the NFC today? Green Bay? Yeah, I watched them play. Over second quarter. You go to the AFC right now. If Kansas City's number one, and I got my Herd hierarchy top of next hour, I got an argument. Tennessee matches up with them. Pittsburgh does. We know Baltimore's feisty. I mean, it's what? Like Trent Dilfer talked about this yesterday. It's the accountability, the passion of Brady and LeBron, and the accountability to demand you are all in. You are completely committed to winning basketball.
He's the ultimate fire breather. I mean, Tom Brady elevates. We talked about last week. This is elevate your team. Elevate your entire organization, your entire city. He's going to demand excellence every second of every day. And if you don't join him, you're going to be out of there. You're not going to be playing much. And look what he's done to a Bruce Arians, who has forever been a risky head coach. His team typically have a lot of penalties, a lot of turnovers, no turnovers, two straight weeks. I mean, he's changed the head coach. Nobody changes the culture like Tom Brady.
And it really does remind me of LeBron. For years and years, we talked about all the stars in the West. But the minute LeBron gets over and he's healthy and gets AD, you see all the holes. You see all the holes. You look at, same with Saban. We always bragged about the SEC, and then Saban gets there, and you're like, wow, Tennessee and Auburn are really dysfunctional. Oh, God, so is Florida. Georgia's talented, but never quite has the coach Alabama does. And suddenly they all look really good unless you compare them to great and Saban, and it's like they're not really that competitive, and the West wasn't really that competitive. I don't even know who the second-best team in the NFC is now. I think it's Green Bay. I think. I saw them play. It wasn't competitive. I mean, take the Saints game out. No preseason. It was Tom and a bunch of guys he'd never seen before. They played poorly against Chicago. And that was the moment that Tom said, okay, we're going to be a little feistier here and a little more demanding and be a little more accountable. The good times are over. It's time to ratchet it up. And this morning, I don't think anybody's close. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Cam Newton is approaching this week as if his starting job is in jeopardy following a bad performance Sunday against the Niners. But he's not just thinking about losing his job. He's thinking about losing respect of the locker room.
And the first thing I said, you know, to myself coming home, I said, you keep playing games like that, bro, and it's going to be a permanent change. I don't fear coach's stability or my position stability more so than controlling the locker room. Because knowing, yeah, you have your coach's, you know, belief, but my belief is I want to have the whole facility.
He was benched in the fourth quarter for Jarrett Stidham. Bill Belichick claims he was just trying to get Stidham some reps, but I don't know that that would be really necessary if Cam Newton was playing well. He was 9 of 15, 98 yards, no touchdowns and 3 interceptions. Look, this was a terrible game for the Patriots. What's daunting is what's moving forward for them. So they're at the Bills, then they're at the Jets, assuming they can win that game. They have the Ravens, and then they're at Houston, which, even though Houston is not a good team this year, they're competitive in putting up points in every game.
If I said take Cam Newton's career, cut it in half, the biggest game in the history of Cam's first half was a Super Bowl.
Right.
I'd argue this is the biggest game in the second half. Forget the Patriots for a second. Cam needs to get some good football on film. Because the Seattle game now, everybody looks great against Seattle. If I'm Cam Newton, I understand winning the locker room matters. I do get that. But Cam also needs, because Cam's got football left. You can make an argument, like he's got 4 good years left. He's healthy. He's big. He's physical. Cam needs to start putting good tape out there. Because if he's not going to be in New England, and it doesn't look like they're a very good football team. I mean, Joy, it's the slowest football team in the league. They're not winning 10 games here.
Well, yes. And look, like personally, I was rooting for Cam, and Cam looked good initially, right? So maybe that confused us as to what New England really is.
Yeah. But what they are is rebuilding.
But they weren't a good team. So
8 players opted out.
Right. On top of that. So what kind of expectations did everyone have for New England? I think we all kind of got caught up in what Cam looked like in the first game.
Well, September's fooled us my entire life. Ryan Fitzpatrick has looked like the second best quarterback in the league in September twice. Like, September fools you because the weather's perfect, so, you know, and all of a sudden you wake up, and this morning it's like Arizona appears to be way better than New England. The Raiders in September. So right. It's like this is not like anybody's fault. We all get fooled by September. Every year it's like Andy Reid would have 12 Super Bowls if the season stopped October 3rd. And then his teams have not quite, like last year, finally they got better at the end of the year.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those things where September, everybody's healthy, but New England is a totally limited roster.
I felt like this past week was a really pivotal game, a game that they had to win. So as badly as they played, I think is a sign of what they are, because that was a game they really needed to win.
Yeah.
And now they're at the Bills, which is another good team who's trying to win the AFC East, like a division game. So He's going to need to play really well in this game. I agree with you. This is a crucial game for Cam Newton, not just for the Patriots, but for Cam's future. So Antonio Brown has experience with Bruce Arians from their time together in Pittsburgh. But Arians thinks Brown will be starting from square one when he joins the Bucs. He said, when I left, they changed the terminology in Pittsburgh for all those years he played. So it'll pretty much be ground zero with him. Other than the route tree, we run routes and things like that. It'll be a big adjustment for him, but we'll get him up to speed. He can officially join the team after week eight, and the Bucs face the Saints week nine. He had four receptions for 56 yards and a touchdown, the only game he played with Brady last season.
Did you see that Chris Godwin broke a finger, so he's out? So he's going to get snaps when he's... The question you and I both have is, when Godwin and Mike Evans are eventually healthy, and we're thinking it's this year,
right,
the question will become with Scotty Miller, like, where do you get... They're going to be a lot... You're going to have three elite premier... Well, at least two... superstar level wide receivers.
I'm not going to assume that Antonio Brown is going to come in and be and look like he did in that game with the Patriots, because it's been a long time since he's played football. But if Chris Godwin is hurt for a significant amount of time and Antonio Brown comes in and starts to develop that kind of chemistry with Tom Brady, there's not going to be really a whole lot of complaining that's merited, because and Chris Godwin is a great player and has been a good teammate for the Bucs, but if you're not available, you're not there.
Listen, I said that. Did I say this to you the other day? Like, I went to Jay Glazer Sunday off the air, and I said, some of this feels like Brady is getting tired of these guys always having a hamstring issue. You can play with a broken finger, by the way. It's the NFL. Everybody does. So it's like, at some point, do you bring AB in to say, guys, I've got a new guy.
I mean, you know, I'm not judging people's injuries. Right. If I had a broken finger, I might be crying for the next 3 weeks. Yeah. But it is what it is. Like, if you're not available, then someone else is going to be there playing. And I have no faith that this is going to work. I'm at zero.
Yes.
I'm simply watching. I am observing, and that is it. I have no expectations of how this is going to look or work or how it's going to turn out, because based off of the information that I have, which is a lot, it doesn't work out. Well, so I'm just going to watch and observe. I agree with Arian. So it's going to take some time for him to get going. Finally, the 49ers suffered even more injuries this weekend. Wide receiver Deebo Samuel is dealing with a left hamstring strain and will likely miss the next two games. And Sunday's star running back Jeff Wilson Jr. suffered a high ankle sprain and is expected to be placed on injured reserve this week. So more injury issues for the 49ers, who already have a lengthy list of injuries.
Oh, Lord. By the way, they play Seattle this week. It's my favorite bet of the week. Seattle over San Francisco. I said last week, Green Bay over Houston was my bet of the NFL season. Seattle over San Francisco. Nobody's as good as they were the previous week. The Niners are not that good, and now they're falling apart. They have so many good, capable players hurt right now.
So many injuries. For our radio listeners, it's essentially an NBA roster.
12 guys.
Injuries. It's a lot.
And most of them are good players.
Yes, and it's a bad time for them to have those injuries because, as you mentioned, they're at the Seahawks, and they have the Packers, and then they're at the Saints, and then they have a bye. So they have a stretch of three really tough games coming up before their bye. They're fourth in the NFC West right now at 4-3, Rams 5-2, Cardinals 5-2, and the Seahawks 5-1. So where we might have closed the door on the 49ers too soon as far as how well they can still play and keep it together, the injuries might just be the thing that overwhelms them this year.
Yeah. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live
News.
You
know, I was saying about 10 minutes ago that for years and years, we bragged how great the SEC was. Saban arrived and just, I mean, won by three touchdowns every game. And for years and years, I was like, God, the West is good. Then LeBron gets out West, gets a really good teammate, and you're like, man, there's a lot of dysfunction and youth and a lot of Western teams that are very, very thin. And for years and years, we thought the NFC was so deep and talented. But right now, the gap between Kansas City and maybe Tennessee, which is the third or fourth best AFC team, feels like inches. Who's the second best team? 7 weeks in Tampa, and it feels like Brady's moved over to the NFC, and I don't see anybody close. Right now, he's the third highest graded quarterback. I don't get the people bailing on Tom. He's never been athletic. Doug Gottlieb now joining us, the Dugger, after our show, Fox Sports Radio, joining us live, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. I don't know. It's. I watched last night, and I've got 2 5-win teams. The Bears, which I think we all kind of knew, a little bit of a fraud. And then the Rams, they're good. Jalen Ramsey's not having a great year, but I'll ask you, who is the second best team in the NFC this morning to Tampa Bay?
Well, you didn't like the Bears, and a couple weeks ago they kicked the crap out of the Buccaneers. That did happen, right? That's the same. Those are the same teams.
Yeah, but you.
So look, here's where I love you because you've come around on something. Well, I mean, everybody's come around, obviously, on Saban. But if you remember, and we have the tape somewhere, when Saban got the job at Alabama, you thought it didn't matter. It wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Right? And what I said was, everyone said about Saban, he's not the world's greatest college football coach. He's an indefatigable recruiter. And when you combine that with the boosters and the reach and the passion of Alabama football, I thought it would work, and frankly, it has. That's what LeBron did, right? LeBron got to the West, and the West didn't lay down for him. Matter of fact, it was kind of a disaster because they couldn't find that second star. When he did, now he has a ready-made roster. Now all the things culture-wise that he wanted to put in place with the Lakers worked. They won a championship. And I think that's the difference here, because Brady took on a team where if Jameis Winston just didn't turn the ball over last year, they're in the playoffs. Now you have a guy who doesn't turn it over, a very good defense. It's very well coached with a great front seven. And then an offense that had good skill position players, and they reworked that offensive line. And yes, they are rounding into becoming the best team in the NFC. But I got to warn you, okay, two things happened here in this last week. One, they took on the Raiders, whose entire offensive line was sent home because of COVID, right? And so we have no idea what the Raiders really are based upon their performance against the Buccaneers. And secondly, they added Antonio Brown to the mix, and that can be toxic. More is not more. Less is more. Now, Chris Godwin's out because he has a broken finger. So when Antonio Brown comes back, he may get more looks than he would have otherwise. But it should be pointed out that we still don't know how good Tampa is when they play on the road and he gets overwhelmed like he did in Chicago. And if Antonio Brown can live with getting 3, 4, 5 targets a game, even if his team is winning.
You know, it's interesting. I was saying Jerry Jones got really, really ticked off this morning on Dallas radio, and people forget what a pioneer Al Davis was. He took on the NFL. He was a former assistant NFL coach. He knew football. He was envied. He was clever. He hired John Madden at like 30. He was really progressive, smart. Last 8, 9 years, it didn't turn out well. You know, Jerry took on the league. Stan Kroenke listens to him. He got teams in Vegas and Los Angeles. But then I watch them right now, and I don't think he's mad at the media. I think Jerry's mad at himself. I think he whiffed, and I think they're in danger of becoming the Raiders, a legendary owner, and they're just, like, they're embarrassing. Like, the Raiders for about 8 years were embarrassing. Am I wrong on this? Are they becoming the Raiders under the older Al Davis?
There's a lot of parallels there. I think where you lose me is the Cowboys have players, right? The Raiders fell apart when they traded John Gruden. They lost in the Super Bowl. Bill Callahan was the right head coach for a year, but the wrong head coach long term. But, you know, Rich Gannon got hurt, and they didn't have any money, and they didn't have players, and then they made bad draft picks. That's not where the Cowboys are. The Cowboys, I would agree with you, the Mike McCarthy era is a mistake. It's an error. Mike McCarthy error, not E-A-R. E-E-R-A, sorry. Look, we should have seen this coming. Do you remember that he had that fluff piece in the NFL Network? I think it was like an hour special on how, like, every week he got together with his football coaches in Green Bay and watched tape on every snap, and he was ready to evolve as a football coach. He gets the job in Dallas, and two things happened which my antennas went up. Okay, first thing was at the press conference where he had told everybody, hey, I watched every snap of every game in the NFL. He admitted that he hadn't done it for the Cowboys. And, well, you know, he said those things to get the job. One, why did you admit it? And two, how can you do that? Secondly, he didn't call Dak Prescott for like the first 2 weeks he had the job.
Yeah.
That's your quarterback. Now, whether or not Dak was going to sign a long-term deal or a franchise tag deal, didn't matter. Dak was the quarterback of the Cowboys. Like, that's the very first call you make. You don't call your wife. Okay, you don't call your mom, your dad. You don't call your coaching buddies. The first call you make is to your quarterback. Hey, man, I'm so excited to work together. He didn't do that. So that right there, I was blown away. DK Metcalf is playing harder on defense than anybody in the Dallas Cowboys.
That's true. Yeah, no,
right? The effort that he showed on one play is better than anything you see on tape from the Dallas Cowboys. And look, head coaching in the National Football League is not necessarily about X and O. It's not about being a great play caller. Yes, Andy Reid's a great play caller. And Sean McVay's a great play caller. It's about, can you stand in front of a room of 53 men and get them to believe that what you're telling them will in fact work if they do their job? That's what the best of the best do. And the fact that he can't get those guys to buy in at this point in the season through this amount of embarrassment just tells you it's not going to work. So I'm with you on the coaching staff. You know, light a match. The Kellen Moore thing, I think, actually works. It was working with Dak Prescott. Just get rid of everybody else and bring in somebody that can believe in. Look, should you, if you're Jerry Jones, should you walk in today and just cut somebody? Right? Like, think of what he did last year with Jalen Smith. He was so mad about Ezekiel Elliott that he's like, give me somebody to sign. Give me somebody. Let's sign Jalen Smith. And they overpaid Jalen Smith, who, by the way, isn't what his contract says he should be and isn't playing with the effort he should play with. So now you got to do the exact same thing. First thing you should do is walk in and say, let's cut somebody. Cut somebody who thinks they know more than the coaching staff. And then if this thing doesn't turn around, don't be afraid to admit what most men won't do is admit they made a mistake and start over.
By the way, it's interesting. I'm going to defend Baker Mayfield here. OBJ got hurt, and then once he got hurt, people started delivering the data where Baker's actually better when he wasn't on the field with OBJ. And it doesn't sound like it makes sense, right? Chemistry is really hard. A great Hollywood marriages look like they should work. The kids are beautiful. They're two successful people. What a great life. They're both rich. Chemistry's hard. And you look at OBJ, it's nobody's fault. But OBJ was a superstar. Baker's having to overcome the dysfunction of Cleveland. And I look at this morning and I think, actually, Baker's probably better without OBJ. At Oklahoma, he just spread the ball around to a bunch of really good players. He was excellent. And in this game Sunday, OBJ gets hurt early. That's the best Baker's ever looked. And that it doesn't sound right. But I think OBJ is so big, he needs an Aaron Rodgers. He needs a star quarterback that can be at his level. And I think it's been very hard on Baker Mayfield here to make a superstar happy. And I think they're going to be both better without each other. Is that fair?
It is fair. There's a couple things here at play. First, let's be honest. It's the Bengals. Okay.
Yeah.
The Bengals are the same team that made Phillip Rivers look 10 years younger just the week before when they had a 3-score lead. Okay. So let's first catch our breath before we say, hey, Baker's a great quarterback in the NFL. He's playing against the Bengals, who are very much a work in progress on the defensive side of the ball. On the other hand, I'm with you. Look, let's start out in saying we all hope OBJ comes back and he's the same spectacular athlete he was before, right? Like that's, you can say, I think they're better without his ego, personality, arrogance, the need for attention, and still, on the other hand, say, like, look, I think he's a spectacular talent, and I don't think he's a horrible human being. He's never done anything wrong to other people, so I want him to come back and have a successful NFL career. But you're right. It reminds me, remember Dante Culpepper when he was in Minnesota with Randy Moss? Like, he forced the ball to Randy Moss.
Yeah.
Now, Baker isn't good enough to do it on his own, but he's also... nobody's good enough to force it to one guy. And when you don't have the reputation of a wide receiver that the wide receiver has, you have a tendency to go like, he'll bail me out. And that's the wrong way to play within this offense.
Yeah.
We should have seen it coming. You know, Kevin Stefanski and Stephon Diggs, that didn't work last year in Minnesota, despite the fact that Minnesota was successful. It's not what the offense is designed around. Cleveland is not a good fit for the personality of Odell Beckham Jr. And the last thing you hit on, it's a lot like the Tampa experiment with Antonio Brown, right? Like those guys, those personalities are so big and so strong. You have to have a quarterback who can say, hey, dude, no, I'm not going to throw it to you.
Right.
But you got to run hard on every route. And it's a really interesting mix there, right? The best Randy Moss ever was with Tom Brady.
Yeah.
We'll see if the best, you know, Antonio Brown was at his best when Ben Roethlisberger kind of had control of that relationship. We'll see now in Tampa. And I agree with you. I think that's what Odell Beckham Jr. needs. The problem is that he commands so much money, it's really hard to find a quarterback and a wide receiver at those levels that can coexist financially.
Yeah, I think actually Baker and OBJ could flourish. OBJ will be back. He'll be back. Somebody will get him. Wide receivers always have a landing spot when they're special. Doug Gottlieb after our show, Fox Sports Radio. Good seeing you, bud. Top of next hour, The Herd Hierarchy. Coming up next, though, you're going to think I'm crazy, but is it possible that certain franchises just don't know a certain side of the ball and that certain cities dictate their teams? You, the fan, have an impact on your team and who they draft and who they develop. It sounds crazy, but it's a theory I've had forever, and I saw it last night with the Rams and the Bears, plus the Herd hierarchy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Most of America tolerates me. I'm going to ask John Goulet and Joy Taylor to tolerate my theory here. I've thought about this a lot. If you listen to me when I started my career back in Portland, I've talked about this. I talked about it at the other network. I talk about it occasionally here. I believe what I'm going to say is true, and I've spent more time in my life than I care to admit talking about this. Teams become their cities. They do. What do you know? Chicago stinks on offense my entire life. What do you know? The Rams, most of their good players, outside of Aaron Donald, are on offense. Every single Charger team that was any good in my life, it's a beach city, was all about offense. L.A.'s always got good quarterbacks. Go back to Vince Ferragamo. Never been a problem. Chicago has always been about defense because Chicago's in the Midwest, and the Midwest is tough, and Chicago's blue-collar, and I love that city. Working class, tough guys, and the fans love it, and that's what sells tickets, and that's what guys talk about over draft beers. Chicago's tough. The weather's tough. You got to be tough to live in Chicago. You don't have to be tough to live here. It's 72 degrees with a breeze at my house every day. Mojitos every day. It's easy living. In Los Angeles, you are fired as a general manager if you don't understand that it's a distracted market with mountains and a beach and pro college sports. You'll be fired. But Tom Telesco of the Chargers and Les Snead of the Rams, man, they can draft offensive guys. If they couldn't, they'd be fired. Ryan Pace has got a problem. He's the GM of the Bears. And in that city, it's become an offensive league. He's got no feel for offense. It's not a Matt Nagy issue. He'd be unemployed 5 minutes. Chicago has, my whole life, has no feel for offense. That's not what the city is. The city's about hard work, head down, crappy weather, overcoming. Los Angeles, Jeff Fisher worked in St. Louis. He looked like a dinosaur an hour into Los Angeles. Nobody's selling defense here. Even Pete Carroll was a defensive coach. He was flash. Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, the wide receiver, they were a flash program. This is a distracted market. LA is a home of stars. You need stars. It's distracted. You won't get people to games. If you can't draft them, you're out. We'll get a new guy. That's why Kawhi is such a weird fit with the Clippers. He doesn't talk. He's more about defense than offense. Will it work? We'll see. But Chicago has no feel for offense. They never have. They traded Khalil Mack for picks, right? They got Khalil Mack, and they gave up picks. The Raiders, a West Coast team, California team, went and got a bunch of good offensive players because that's what the Niners were about with Bill Walsh. And that's what John Gruden's about. And it's what the Rams are about. And now the Chargers go out and get Justin Herbert, and that's what they're about. And Seattle's got a bad defense again, and they're about offense and Russell Wilson. And Arizona's about offense. That's the West. It's distracted. We got college, pro sports, beach, mountains. You got to sell tickets. Pro teams everywhere. College teams everywhere. But in the Midwest, I know you think it's crazy. There's never been a great Laker team, a great Laker team that wasn't flashy. There's never been a great Detroit Pistons team that hasn't been tough. The bad boys. They were always defined by Boston's the same way. Boston's a tough town. Got to punch you right in the forehead in Boston if you disagree on politics. Boston's Belichick, you know, you say Brady, but they were really built. They always had great defenses. Ask Tom Brady. They didn't always have great offenses. Randy Moss, Welker, and Brady was that 2 to 3 year window. It was led by offense. It's always been led by defense. First 6 years, last four. So the reality is Chicago's got no feel for offense. They haven't my entire life. Their defense outscores their offense. That's who they are. And to me, they've got to go. They got to coach. The only two things offensively they have, Allen Robinson and Matt Nagy, they got to get a new GM. They got to turn this franchise upside down. The league has changed. They got to go become offense. They got to think more West. They've got to think more sunshine. Mike Ditka's popular there. Tough guy. All the Chicago legends. You go on that Bears team. What were they about? Defense. Even their quarterback was headbutting people. That sells in Chicago, but the league has changed. They got to start over in the front office. You keep Matt Nagy, you keep Allen Robinson. Certain organizations have a feel for one side of the ball. New England's always had a feel for defense with Belichick. But even Seattle, a West Coast team, Pete Carroll's defense, what are they? It's all offense. I think Chicago, Nagy, Allen Robinson, keep everything else. They got no feel for it. What a shock. They get Khalil Mack. The Raiders get all offense. Their defense 2 years later in Chicago carries the team. Again, it always does. Maybe I'm nuts. I think about this stuff. Herd Hierarchy next.